Wells confessed that he'd spent some 30 years, since the dawn of the progressive era, reworking the idea of liberal fascism. "I have never been able to escape altogether from its relentless logic," he explained. "We've seen the fascisti in Italy in a number of clumsy imitations elsewhere, and we have seen the Russian Communist Party coming into existence to reinforce this idea. And now he was done waiting. I'm asking for liberal fascisti, for enlightened Nazis. And do not let me leave you in the slightest doubt as to the scope and ambition of what I'm putting before you," he continued. These new organizations are not merely organizations for the spread of defiant opinions. The days of that sort of amateurism are over. They are organizations to replace the dilatory indecisiveness of democracy. The world is sick of parliamentary politics. The Fascist Party, to the best of its ability, is Italy now. The Communist Party, to the best of its ability, is Russia. Obviously, the fascists of liberalism must carry out a parallel ambition on a still vaster scale. They must begin as a disciplined sect, but they must end as the sustaining organization of a reconstituted mankind. Wells' fiction was so thinly veiled in its praise for fascism that the attentive reader can only squirm. In The War in the Air, German airships liquidate New York City's black and sinister polyglot population. In The Shape of Things to Come, veterans of a great world war, mostly airmen and technicians, in black shirts and uniforms, fight to impose one-world government on the beaten and undisciplined masses. In Wells' far-flung future, a historian looks back in the 20th century and finds that the roots of the new enlightened air dictatorship lay in Mussolini's fascism, a bad good thing, the historian calls it, as well as Nazism and Soviet communism. In 1927, Wells couldn't help but notice the good there is in these fascists. There is something brave and well-meaning about them. By 1941, no less a figure than George Orwell couldn't help but conclude, much of what Wells has imagined and worked for is physically there in Nazi Germany. Wells was an enormous fan of FDR's, and the two met often at the White House, particularly during 1934. Wells pronounced Roosevelt the most effective transmitting instrument possible for the coming of the New World Order. In 1935 and 1936, he briefly switched to Huey Long's and Father Coughlin's more exciting brand of fascism. He described the Bayeux dictator as a Winston Churchill who has never been at Harrow. By 1939, however, he was again firmly back in the Roosevelt camp, seeing FDR's brand of personal government as indispensable. Wells's vision neatly captures the sense of excitement that infused the Western left in the 1930s. It should be no surprise that an avant-garde of self-described supermen would welcome an age where supermen would run the world.